Welcome to the only one-shot studios, and it's located in the great state of Mississippi. That was our friend Steve Azar with the song The Coach. That's from his Indianola album, which you can find on steveazar.com. He's got some new stuff coming out. He's great. He's from the Mississippi Delta. Dear friend of mine, loves golf and loves singing. Does it both well. So check him out. You can find us on Instagram, our only one shot. We've got a nice little page there, some videos, hopefully someday. But I'm your host. My name's Jim Gallagher Jr. I played on the PGA Tour from 1984 to 2000, won a few times, five times on the PGA Tour. Had a nice career, played the Ryder Cup, we won. Played the President's Cup, we won. Loved being an American, loved playing with the American team, and took a little bit of time off after that, played a little bit on the PGA Tour, Champions Tour. And now I'm a golf analyst for the Golf Channel, and you can find me on Instagram at Gallagher Jr. and on Twitter at GallagherJRGC. So what exactly is Only One Shot? It's a book written by Vijay Trolio. He's a top 100 teacher in the country. He's located at Old Waverly Golf Club in West Point, Mississippi. Had a successful playing career both as a college player and as a professional, and moved on to the teaching side of the golf. He's one of the brighter minds and has written three other books. I think he's one of the best teachers in the Southeast and one of the best in the country. He taught my children. And he's my co-host. We've done three podcasts. This is number four. We've hoped to have some special guests further along the line. Basically, we're trying to give a little bit of insight on how elite, competitive, gritty, and healthy competitors are made. And that's our job. And we want to welcome Vijay Trolio into podcast number four.
Thank you, Jimmy. Good to be here.
Yeah, it's great to have you. And we're going to talk about something that's really dear to your heart, or it's become dear to your heart. May not have been as you growing up in the game, but it's instruction. And maybe give some folks a little bit of a kind of a guide to that. I mean, you're one of the top teachers, been doing it a long time. But how important is instruction? How important is it getting the correct instructor? I know this might be everybody come see Vijay at Old Waverly, because they should. But if you're out there and you're not close to Vijay, I mean, what's the best way? What's the guide to that?
Instruction is very important from the standpoint of what are you trying to build, mm-hmm. right? So you played the tour for a long, long time. Are there really that many different ball flights out there?
No.
Right. Yeah. PGA Tour players are efficient.
Yes.
They hit it pretty far, pretty straight all the time.
I just spent a weekend with the University of Tennessee golf team, and yes, they're very long, very straight, and well-equipped. They got the tools.
Their short games take very few days off. Mm-hmm. They putt and chip the ball well, pretty consistently. So from an instruction standpoint, if you're trying to edge out and build a Division I athlete or a PGA Tour player, you're going to run out of different ways to do it, mm-hmm. because there's only a certain amount of ways that are efficient enough to jump in airplanes, fly around the country, and do it at all these different places with all these different variables going on. So I would say that instruction is of the utmost importance if you're trying to build a very good player. If you're just trying to figure out a way to play your local golf course.
Yeah, say we've just got someone that's not trying to play at a competitive level.
Yeah, but I don't think instruction is that big of a deal. Okay. You're going to run into some roadblocks where you can't cure your slice, or you know, you might need to go get some lessons on understanding grip and ball position relationships. But, you know, I don't think instruction is a huge, huge part of just trying to get it around a golf course.
You're just out having fun.
That's right.
And the main purpose of these podcasts is to kind of get the information out to maybe a parent or a young junior golfer that wants mm-hmm. to take it to another level, to a higher level. And that's our job. I mean, so, all right, you know, where do you look? How do you go find an instructor? I mean, that sounds like you'd Google it. I mean, I don't know. I mean, because is it word of mouth? That's a tough thing. That's a tough choice. It's a little like finding a doctor. I mean, how do you find the best heart doctor? Is it reputation? I mean, I know people, and you are a top 100 instructor in the country, but there's a lot of good instructors that aren't on that list.
Yes.
And I mean, but how does a person go around and finding the one that maybe fits them?
Word of mouth is huge. The way other athletes move and swing the golf club, number two. Number three, how do you gel with the coach? So mm-hmm. is the coach like you? Is a situation where the coach can become more of a mentor for you? Number four is proximity. So proximity is not number
one. That's a big thing, not only in becoming, it's that comes up a lot in our podcast, and that's a big part of success.
And so, you know, you don't need to be super duper close to a really, really good coach as far as distance. Mm-hmm. You can certainly have somebody 150, 200 miles away from you that you go see once every 6 weeks, 8 weeks,
and you
weeks.
Have people that do that.
And and most really good instructors do. Mm-hmm. That being said, you need to run that gamut, and you need to see, okay, you know, well, all right, what am I looking, what's my end goal? What are we trying to do? How curious about the game is this junior golfer? How, you know, what do I see them doing? Are they always out there chipping and putting and trying things and doing different things? Are they really trying to work on hitting different shots? And if you see that kind of curiosity, then it's like, okay, well, who out there that they're playing with or that I swing the golf club is moving it around in space in a way that I deem efficient, right? Because ultimately, mm-hmm. that's the whole thing. It's like if the athlete and the parent don't think it's good, then they're probably not going to buy in.
Right.
Number three is, can I buy into that guy's character? So can I buy into who he is or who she is as a coach or a person? And then number four is, can I get there enough?
Wow. Another one is, can I afford it? Okay. So the I don't try to keep, I mean, hey, it's like doctors. You've studied, you've worked hard, you make what you can make. But say you're on a limited budget. Is it more important for the instructor or to get the equipment? I mean, that's the question. I mean, that's a tough one for most people out there.
Yeah, there's going to be a situation you get into where, from an instructor standpoint, we want people to be the best they can be. Mm-hmm. To do that, we have to be able to demonstrate basically the same ideas a multitude of different ways. And as technology comes out, we usually grab it. And we don't grab it because we're scientists, because we're not. We grab it because sometimes the overhead view in video explains something to that athlete that down the line doesn't. Well, that overhead camera costs more. Sometimes that orange box tells them and gives them a graphic of their club moving 5 degrees inside out that video doesn't. Well, that orange box isn't for free.
You're talking about gadgets that the instructor has.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, not gadgets you see on TV that you can buy for three easy payments of $19.95.
No, the best technology out there is, the reason it's the best technology is because of its accuracy, but also because of its visual impact on the athlete. And so that drives up our cost. Mm-hmm. And so when you have a situation where you're trying to manage, from my standpoint, from an instruction standpoint, when somebody comes in and they say, well, you know, if I spend $450 here over 6 weeks, that's a lot of money. And it is. Mm-hmm. It is also less than three nights in a Hampton Inn.
That's true.
The average cost of golf tournaments, junior events these days, is somewhere in the neighborhood of $250.
That's for a whole nother podcast.
That's just an entry fee.
Yeah.
But it's not any different when in any sport, the further you're trying to go up the ladder, the more expensive the travel is going to be. So the instruction part for me should fit into your budget, but before it fits into your budget, it should fit into how curious that athlete is.
Right.
If you have an extremely curious athlete that has obviously been given a God-given gift of curiosity about a certain sport, then, you know, that parent, when they see that, needs to sort of settle that for themselves.
Don't parents have to be a little bit leery that we all have this false sense that our kid's better than they are when they might be average? You know, when you're talking about the kid's curiosity or the player's curiosity, that's the key.
Yeah.
But there's so many of us, we're all included, that our kids are, you know, oh, little Johnny's the best in the class, and he's basically average.
It's just fine for every other kid because every other kid's average except my kid.
My kids, and I think we as parents, and I think, okay, you've hired the instructor, all right, and you've had this happen. So I'm the dad, and that's little Johnny, and he's the greatest thing that's walked on this earth.
Yeah.
How does the parent stay out of the way and let the instructor instruct and not the parent start instructing?
Well, that's where the coach, that's the reason that coaches that have been, like you refer to the top 100. Mm-hmm. So part of that eligibility, that criteria to meet that is you have to have taught for 15 years. Well, part of the reason why is because it takes a lot of experience to handle all these different personalities we see from a parenting standpoint, from a child standpoint, from a professional standpoint. You know, I have personally been on a range with a PGA Tour player and them start snapping clubs.
I've thrown one down the range, so I've that's towards the end of my career. Yeah. But yeah, that happens.
I've personally witnessed my own son lay up in a water hazard.
I've done that myself, so we're guilty here.
So, you know, when you get into the game itself, you part of the reason that you're going to have these instructors, the cost is going to be high, number one, because of technology. Number two, because they've been doing it for a long time. They have a lot of different screwdrivers and tools in their toolkit to handle the situation and to let the parents see it. It's like the commercialists on television. We've seen a thing or two. And so your best instructors are going to have, their prices are going to be high because of the technology, and their prices are going to be high because they've seen a thing or two.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, and that's a great point, because I think, you know, we sit there and go, oh my gosh, it's going to cost that to go. But I mean, a dinner in a Hampton Inn costs you, you know, way more
that's
than
right.
that. I mean, it's like, what is the end result? What are you trying to accomplish here? I mean, we try and I think.
And you're not going to accomplish world-class performance on a budget.
No.
It's not going to happen. It's going to take sacrifices.
By everybody.
Including the instructor.
Yes. Yes, exactly. And I think, you know, we talked about that. And you've got two young junior golfers and going through that. I've been through it and about done with it because our legacy breaker, Elizabeth, is not playing. But, you know, that was the tough thing for us. I mean, she, to us, had, and I've seen a lot of good golf swings. She had a great golf swing, but she just didn't have that. Wasn't a desire to go do it.
That's right.
She didn't have the curiosity to do that. And that was, you know,
You guys did not spend nearly as much money on taking her to tournaments, getting her golf instruction. You offered it to her, but y'all didn't push it on her.
And we made sure. And that's one thing.
She just was not as curious about it as your oldest and your
Kathleen. I think, having four kids. Mary Langdon, my oldest, was the most competitive one in the earth. I mean, she would cut your head off.
And she was very curious about getting better at golf.
Yes. And she started late. I mean, Mary Langdon started it. I mean, I think it was her just freshman year in college. She went to play soccer. She's a great athlete.
Freshman year in high school.
And she walked in, I think it was her sophomore year, says, Dad, I want to play college golf. And I looked at her like, what? I said, okay. And we did. She had the curiosity and worked really hard, won a state AM her senior year in high school.
And you took her, it was one summer where
she
blossomed.
Summer.
Took her everywhere. You taught her everything you knew about golf, and then you brought her over here, and we got her understanding if she does X, Y, and Z, the ball goes X, Y, and Z.
And right? I think, and everyone thinks, oh, you're a great player, you got to be an instructor. Well, just because I was a good player, and that's for the parents out there, just because you're a good player doesn't make you a good instructor.
No, you, from a technical standpoint, you're a terrible instructor.
Yes, I got fired for 8 years.
Now, that
soccer.
Being said, from a playing standpoint, and you know that most tournaments are won and lost during practice rounds and during hotel rooms. Mm-hmm. You know that.
Yes.
And so you were awesome at understanding how to get around a golf course, building a strategy, and also on how to talk to Mary Langdon or how to talk to anybody about after the round and before the next one. Because you know how important that time is.
Yeah. And can you live the life? I mean, I think, you know, Sissy, my wife, is a 12-time state AM champion, but she loves instruction. I did not like that part of it. But I love the other part, the preparation, the mental side of that fascinated me, to be prepared. And I think that's for any parent, you know, when they start playing, you get your kid wanting to play junior golf. You've got to allow them to become great. Give them the tools. They still have to figure it out. But there has to be a plan. I mean, we talked about Dr. Coop. I mean, practice with a purpose. I mean, you probably stressed that to your students thousands of times.
Oh, yeah, Dr. Coop, that was one of the coolest trips I've ever been on. And Dr. Coop was an amazing guy. And I recall vividly him telling me, or him asking me, a simple statement. He says, how many great golf swings have you seen? And I said, quite a few. And he said, how many great champions have you seen? And I said, not many. He said, so do you think it's mental? Now, in the world of instruction, this is broadening itself out. But
that is a part of instruction, is the mental side.
Well, it's broadening itself out now. So you can pay an instructor. So the instructor's helping your youngster from a technical standpoint, or maybe from a playing standpoint, or maybe a practice schedule standpoint. But do you see how quickly it became you using your skills as a parent to also help?
Right.
Right. And so, like, an instructor, I've been fired before, and I'll be fired again. And I've been hired before, and I'll be hired again. From my standpoint, an instructor is not a cure-all.
No.
It's not a cure-all. And if you aren't seeing the instructor enough, then it's really not a, he's really not a cure-all, or she's not a cure-all.
It's like going on a diet. If you really don't stay on the diet, you're not
going
to
lose any
weight.
If you're seeing the instructor a lot, but you're not doing what they ask you to do, the instructor's not a cure-all. It's a relationship. There's a puzzle there, and it's being put together by the athlete, the parent, the instructor, and the other mentors in their life. Every athlete that I've ever coached that has been good, and when I say good, I'm referring to a Curtis Cup player, a Solheim player, a USGA, somebody that gets deep in a USGA event, a Palmer Cupper, a first-team All-American, a college, Division I college winner, a multiple state junior winner. All these athletes have one thing in common, and that is the message from the coach, the message from their home, the message from their mentors, and the message they're giving themselves is consistent. As soon as you go pay an instructor and you disagree with what they say, and the kid says it's too hard to change, and the parent goes, yeah, you were doing it good the way you were doing it, it's over before it's over. It could be the greatest, the single greatest coach, as far as if you just look at their record right now, is Butch Harmon. You could take your kid to Butch Harmon, and if when y'all walked out, you're like, I disagree with some of that. I don't think the swing, I don't think that grip's right, and you sure seem to hit it better when your swing was a little longer than that.
How are you aware of that trap you fall in? The switching instructors, because that's kind of where you're going to. I mean, hey, I'm fed up with Joe. I'm going to go over to Jim.
Well, blame the instructor. That's fine. That's part of the reason you pay him, is to blame him. Now, that being said, also look around. As a parent, I have to do this. Look around at the parts that you're playing in it. Look, help the kid understand the part they're playing in it. Because you could have the single greatest coach in the world, and if the kid's not doing what they ask of them, it's not doing them any good. It's doing them some good. So I always, in the book, we refer to it as a 70-30 rule. So the parent is going to make up 70% of it. So the culture of the home is going to be 70% of what that athlete gets. You and Sissy, both, Sissy's won 12 state AMs. You're a five-time winner on the PGA Tour. When Kathleen or Mary Langdon were here, if we were making a grip change, you guys never said, no, we're just fine without that. If we were making a grip change, because the ball was going somewhere weird, right? The club face was not pointing the right direction. So you guys always had my back, and then I always showed respect to y'all for understanding who y'all were as far as parents that were spending a lot of money. And it's like, listen, is she hitting hooks? And it's like, goodness gracious, she hooked it on 13 and 17, and that next day her bunker game was terrible. Everything's, it's like, oh, I get it, right? So there's the grip change. So that way, the instructor, the parent, and the athlete are all on the same page. And when it comes to that, we as parents will spend just about anything to help the curiosity of our kids. We will spend almost anything to help them achieve their goals.
Absolutely.
So money should be the last part of this,
right,
from an instruction standpoint. And the role that the parent takes should be a little bit larger than the role that the instructor takes.
I meant to ask this a little bit earlier, but you say you've got two different types of players. I was a field player. You've got a mechanical player. I mean, as an instructor, how do you figure that out? Or is there a way of figuring that out, which one's mechanical, and thinking which one's...
There's never been a there's never been a field player from Germany.
No.
Because the German culture isn't that way. There's never been a mechanical player from Italy because the Italian culture is not that way. There's never going to be a perfect golf swing from Spain because the Spanish, they're like the Italians. It's like ball goes straight. So again, a lot of that mechanical stuff comes from the culture the kid's being brought up in.
Interesting.
And as a, you know, there you go back to that. How long has the coach been around? The coach has to be able to understand that, because there's going to be tendencies. If you grow up in a culture where everything's very technical, like the Swedes, mm-hmm. very technical culture, well, then you're probably going to have to spend a little bit more time, like saying, yes, get your fix on your swing, but we need to go play golf. If you grow up in a Spanish environment, or as we would call it, like a redneck environment, you know, see it, hit it, send it.
Right.
Then we're going to have to also have, all right, look, see it, hit it, send it. I get it. At the same time, like, it probably does matter where your arms are during your golf swing. So we probably need to do a little bit of that. So it's all about that toolkit that that instructor has.
Yeah, I would say with me, I didn't want to as a kid. And there's probably a lot of kids out there who don't want to know why things happened. I don't want to hear about it. I can do this. It's too much information. But when things go wrong, you got to understand why did they go wrong.
If you're trying to be a world-class athlete.
Yes.
Well, yeah, because it's going to go wrong.
It's going to go wrong.
Yeah.
It's going to go wrong for everybody.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, it goes wrong for went wrong for Tiger Woods. I mean, arguably, he and Jack Nicklaus, two greatest players, and they struggled too.
Yeah.
I think everybody does that. But there's so much instruction out there. In the I don't know if the golf swing's evolved, but it's changed so much. I mean, how do you keep up, or do you take the athlete or the player individually? Because a lot of times they go with a certain concept.
Yeah.
This is how they swing. Do you take the kid individually and work with what
he
got?
Yeah, you have to understand that. You have to understand the kid. You have to understand the situation, the parent. But the thing is like you have mass and loft. So mm-hmm. you have a club face, which controls an incredible amount of where the ball goes. Then you have the mass of the club. And then you have the mass of your body, mm. and you have the mass of the golf ball. Mm-hmm. So you got one face, and you got a lot of different weight. Mm-hmm. And the golf ball goes the same direction now that it did in 1901. Mm-hmm. It goes there because of where that mass is going and where that loft's going. That's the reason, like, simple things like ball position, being square to your target, grip. These things will never go out of vogue. They'll never go out of style. Now, that being said, as soon as we see somebody come up like a Matthew Wolf, it's like there's an that is a style of instruction.
Mm-hmm. His own, and he owns it.
Yeah, the biggest leap for me would have been Mr. Hogan and Mr. Nicklaus. So in the 40s and 50s, the guy that owned the world had a really flat golf swing. In the 70s and 80s, the guy that owned the world had a flying elbow and a straight up and down. Mm-hmm. So at some point, we have to get clear on the idea that golf is not super technical. Golf is timing. Mm-hmm. It's speed. So can I generate speed and keep my timing? And then what does the direction of my swing look like? And if that's coordinated and it's efficient, you got it.
But we can't forget about the basics. Grip, stance, setup.
Sure, because
I think we do. I think we come to an instructor, like when we go to a doctor, we want medicine because we're sick.
You know, that's a premise that I give as many, I book as many playing sessions as I do private lessons. And the reason I do is because I can be in here talking about a shift in center of gravity, but then I get on number 2T with somebody and they have the ball back and they aim the club face and the tree's hitting the trees and they go, how did my center of gravity shift? It's like, well, bud, what does it matter? Mm. You know, I can't drive. I cannot win the Indy race driving from the back seat.
Right.
So we have to have the fundamentals of, all right, look, point the club face, you know, aim the loft, aim the face, and swing the mass, right? We got to be able to get out there and perform that.
So you're a junior golfer out there, and you take these instructions. You like the playing lesson part of it, right? You think you learn more from that?
Again, you know, I think we sort of captured all that and put all that together in the first three episodes, but the ability to take the longest walk in golf, as they say, is from the practice range to the first tee, right? Mm-hmm. Heard that?
Oh, yeah.
So what kind of golf instructor am I if I'm not on the golf course helping them take it from the practice range to the first tee? Playing lessons are huge. And if the parents come along and understand it, it's great. Because a lot of parents don't understand, Jimmy, that just because you're 10 years old doesn't mean you have to play the red tees.
Right.
I'll tell you a great story, and Kathleen came to this. So years ago, we had John Tillery teach this, Kevin Kisner and Scott Brown and a whole host of other guys. Mike Adams,
yeah,
World Golf Hall of Fame, you know, who knows how many players he's had went on the PGA Tour.
Yeah, and Todd and Sean.
Yes. We had Tim Yelverton does short game work, me, myself, and then we had Scott Fawcett from Decade System. And they came in, and we brought in a host of kids. I don't know, it was like 11 or 12 kids. And we literally spent 4 hours of 3 days on a driving range. I kind of let Mike, you know, Mike knows, I kind of let Mike run the show, to be honest. And I let Scott Fawcett kind of run the show, and I let John Tillery kind of run the show. And again, it was like golf, playing from the red tees. Who can break 30? Okay, cool. Now let's play 9 holes from the very back tees. No chance to break it, right? We went around that golf course and hit recovery shots and chip shots and bunker shots. And one day, nobody was on the golf course, so Scott's out there setting up flags for targeting for the kids so they could understand what their expectations could be into the green using that system. Every kid came around better. Every kid left better than they came. In fact, the only time anybody got confused was during the 4 hours that we spent on the driving range.
Driving range, yeah. or when I was in here watching for 2 hours, and I was confused.
That's right.
No, I think that's a great point. I mean, there's a lot of different ways. In order to be good, it's going to cost you some money. And now
from an instruction standpoint, yeah, it can...
And that's just the beginning, because we're going to get into this in our next podcast. We're running out of time on this one, and this has been fascinating, but now we're talking junior tournaments. And... you know, what is your end result? What do you want out of this? Is it to play college golf? Is it to become a better player? Is it to become possibly a tour player? I mean, it's going to cost some money. And
and
I think the best thing is, it does the player, the junior golfer, have the desire?
Because if they don't have the desire, has to be there.
It can't be the desire of the parents.
Yeah.
And I think
the desire of the parents is going to follow the curiosity of the athlete.
Sure. And I think as parents, and you mentioned that, we did not push our kids. But we didn't want, like, our son Thomas, who, if he'd have spent a little more time down here with you, and he said it himself, he thinks he could have played college golf. There's no question.
But at
the time...
he didn't have the curiosity.
He did not. He wanted to be with his
friends. And that curiosity to do those kind of things is God-given.
Yeah, and I think for Thomas, but we didn't want Thomas, who was a Sigma Chi, or in business now, to go out there and goes, well, I don't play golf. My dad's Jim Gallagher, my wife, my mom's Sissy.
Sure.
I just don't play golf.
But, I mean, look how healthy he is.
Oh, yeah.
He's a great kid.
He's
he
perfect.
Was part of the team that opened Mossy Oak. He loves the game.
Yeah. And my girls, I mean, both, you know, Mary Langdon, her job, she was a pharmaceutical rep because she played college golf. The connections, the same thing with Kathleen finishing up at LSU. Lizzie, I mean, she's around it. Mm-hmm. But we never forced them, and it was great time to spend it together. And that's, I think, for the most part, for their listeners, you know, for the parents, it's a great way to spend some time, quality time with your kids, and to get to know your kids.
Yeah.
Because it's real easy to give them $20, let them go to the movies, popcorn to friends, and that's when they're getting in trouble. That's what makes this game great, and that's why.
So when you get bored,
there you go. And
what are you close to?
You get pretty much in trouble: gas fumes, perfumes, and alcohol fumes, and that's in the book. And that's an Ed Meeksism. But Veach, thanks for your time. We're going to call an end to this one, and we're going to let Steve Azar take us home with the coach. What would